to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up, because we're going live.
Live.
On the Fight Mixer Show.
Check, 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 mic check, mic check. What's going on, everybody? Dude, fucking Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr., September 12th. Do you believe that shit?
It's amazing. I'm ready for the comeback.
Dude, like 30 minutes as I drink fucking Bud Light Seltzer because there's a nationwide shortage on White Claws for some godforsaken reason.
Yeah, probably has something to do with China.
Probably has something to do with China. Dude, but like Roy Jones Jr. fighting Mike Tyson, like 30 years, this should have happened 30 years ago. But you have Roy Jones Jr., who's an Olympic bronze medalist, won the titles in multiple divisions, one of the baddest motherfuckers on the planet, fighting Mike Tyson, who kills people, married Robin Givens, and he survived that, which is a fucking modern day miracle. And then, you know, the last protege of Customato, the legendary boxing instructor, Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. September 12th. It's fucking crazy, man. It's a wild world we're living in, my friend. And it's gonna be an 8-round exhibition too. And I'm reading this too. There's gonna be like an undercard. And who's that YouTube prick that some dude that's a boxer. He's like a famous YouTube guy is actually gonna be on the undercard fighting some NBA guy. Did you hear about that?
No. Are you talking about Paul Logan maybe or
Paul Logan? Yeah, that guy.
I mean that just. Oh. Cool.
Yeah, that Justin Bieber looking motherfucker. He's gonna be fighting some NBA guy on the prelims, but like it's gonna be like a huge event where it's gonna have like Snoop Dogg performing, and it's gonna have all these rap stars and musicians and acts, and you have of course Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr., which I think Mike Tyson's gonna win. Like, who do you think will win?
I'm a big Tyson guy, so I mean, I don't know anything about the two as far as you know, what they've been up to, what they've been training, you know, how in shape they. I have no idea, but
yeah,
you know, back in the day, Mike Tyson was my guy. So,
right, same here. And I actually met Mike Tyson. I literally shit a chicken when I shook his hand. I was like, dude, I'm meeting Mike Tyson. Like, and I'm a big Mike Tyson fan. I grew up a Mike Tyson fan since like Mike Tyson's Punch Out. My sister bought me that game, and I was yeah, dude. But Ball Bull, remember that prick? That guy?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So I grew up in a Mike Tyson-loving home. And Mike Tyson was always that dude. And he retired in 2003. I thought Roy Jones Jr. should have retired after the first fight with Antonio Tarver. Like, it went to a decision, but obviously Tarver won. And they did a second fight. Roy Jones Jr., you saw the confidence in his swagger just melt away. His angles weren't as sharp anymore. His timing wasn't there, and he got knocked the fuck out. And then he went to a third fight, and Roy Jones Jr. lost that too. But Roy Jones Jr. actually went until 2018. That was his last fight in 2018. So he went 13 years after Mike Tyson retired. But Mike Tyson retired in 2005. If anybody doesn't know that, but you know, I think ring rust is real. I think that's the advantage that Roy Jones Jr. has. But he stands straight. He doesn't angle off Tyson, and he's going to get knocked the fuck out. And I think Tyson is in the best shape of his life, which makes him even really? That much more. Yeah.
At his age? Well, I've seen him. I mean, I watched him swing, and he's still got a hell of a punch.
Some scary shit, my friend. Yeah, and he's training. Do you know who he's training with? He's training with Black House Coach, a guy who trained Anderson Silva and Vanderlei Silva.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a former coach of Shooterbox. Shooterbox is a gym out in Brazil, and that's where Vanderlei Silva, Anderson Silva, the Rua brothers. Who else can I rattle off? And of course, Vanderlei Silva. All those guys started off with Shooterbox. Jose Pele, and I want you guys to look up on YouTube Jose Pele fights because he was a savage among savages. But you know, now Mike Tyson's trained with that coach. He has an MMA coach in his corner. I saw some sparring videos and some clips. He looks good. He looks devastating. And he's in the best shape of his life because he fought way past his prime. He took the Lennox Lewis fight. Make no question about it. He took the Lennox Lewis fight just for money. And after that, he fought a couple more times. And he fought in 2003, I believe. That was his last big win. Knocked him out in the first round. But, you know, he wasn't training to be the best boxer in the world anymore, like the 90s and the 80s. He was training to get a payday, to get out of debt. He was in really bad debt. Robin Givens. What are you saying? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I remember he lost his mansion and all that. So,
yeah, dude, he got taken, man. Robin Givens and his mother, the Black Plague, my friend. Like, they took fucking everything from him. So he was fighting just to get out of debt. And he wasn't, you know, he didn't have the same regimen. And I think he surrounded himself with coaches that no one's going to tell Mike Tyson what the fuck to do. If he wants to spar, he's going to spar. If he wants to jump rope, he's going to jump rope. No one's going to tell Mike Tyson when to train, how to train, who to spar with, when to spar. So he had no coaches in his corner that really gave a shit about him. You know, they just let him hold training sessions and get in as best shape as Mike Tyson thought he should be in. So he lost a couple more fights in 2004, 2005. And then he retired, did a couple of exhibition bouts, and then Rojo Jr. continued his campaign. But I think it was just all money fights and money grabs, you know, nothing concrete to rise up the ranks. And, you know, this is a fight that's 30 years too late. And I can't wait to watch it, to be honest with you.
It'd been nice to have had it 30 years ago, but I think it's still going to be amazing.
Yeah. But I, you know what, unpopular belief that Roy Jones Jr. should have never went up in weight classes and up and down, left and right. Like he was in light heavyweight, middleweight, cruiserweight, every single weight class. And Roy Jones Jr. has been fighting since the 80s. He fought in the Olympics in Seoul, 1988, and he got fucked. He got fucked big time. And it was revenge because all the boxers from South Korea got fucked in the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles. So those judges carried over into the Seoul Olympics, and this is a conspiracy theory, so stay with me here. But those judges carried over, and a fight that, theories. What's up?
So I'm all about the conspiracy theories.
Yeah, man. And you know, Roy Jones Jr. clearly won that fight in the semifinals of the Olympics, and then they fucked him. They gave it to the other guy. So Roy Jones Jr. went professional right away, built up his career, dude. Guy's a badass, you know. He rapped his own entrance music, like his own like entrance songs. He would like be on the microphone rapping his own entrance. He was that assured of himself that he was going to win every single fight. He beat another notable name. He beat James Toney, and James Toney ended up fighting in UFC, and he got fucking dolly whopped by Randy Couture. You remember that fight?
Not a lot of it, no.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that long. Randy Couture was like, I'm not going to stand up with him, but all right. So shot for a ankle pick, took him down, rear naked choke, game over. But that's our connection with the boxing wall. You know what I love to see? I love to see Conor McGregor do a boxing fight and be on this card. What do you think about that?
Well, I heard Mayweather's talking about he'd like to do another fight with him. And – it would obviously be boxing.
Yeah.
That would be okay to have on there, but it wouldn't – Mike Tyson fight would sell me that. I don't need to see Mayweather and McGregor, you know.
Yeah.
I don't need to see that again. That was not that spectacular.
Yeah, I don't want to see Mayweather.
If they get in the cage, that'd be a whole other story about whether to pay for that. But.
Why would Mayweather get into a place where he's going to be probably?
I understand. Well, money is the big factor.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but he's not going to get into a fucking cage. He cares more about his legacy than he cares about money. No matter what he calls himself, Money Mayweather, Pretty Boy Floyd, or whatever the fuck he calls himself, I don't give a shit how flashy he is and how much he flexes on Instagram. He cares more about his legacy than he cares ever about money. And he's going to strategically place himself in fights that he knows the probability is going to be on his side where he's going to win.
Right.
You know, Pacquiao, that fight happened way too late. It should have happened fucking 2007 when Pacquiao was on a run.
Yeah, that was pretty much the fight that made me lose interest in boxing.
You know, it was a strategic battle. It was a good battle. Mayweather picked the shots. You know,
we can argue this just like we would argue the Usman fight.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a well strategically fought fight where right. he wants to go down to the decisions and he scores points.
Right.
Not my idea of entertaining at all.
But are you going to work smarter or are going to work harder? You know, why put yourself in
danger? I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be champ. I'm just saying it's not entertaining or worth me watching.
Right. And but when you get up in age, though, the first thing to go is your chin. And for anybody that hasn't fought or anything like that, the first thing to go is your chin. So ask Chuck Liddell that. He knows all about that.
Oh, yeah.
So why are you going to put yourself in danger? And that's why I respected Floyd Mayweather fighting Conor McGregor and his style in that fight, because he played possum. He carried him all throughout those rounds. He kept marching forward. And then finally, you know, he turned into a slugfest and he knocked out a TKO'd Conor McGregor. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you, man. You know, Floyd Mayweather, you know, he didn't want to put his chin at risk. So, of course, he had a point fight. Of course, he had to play the fencer.
Well, he does that pretty much every fight. So I'm just.
Yeah, but he also has had a lot of injuries too. He's broken his knuckles.
I'm not saying he's not fighting to the best of his ability and playing the game. I mean, he's dancing under the rules and abiding by the rules. And he's, you know, as far as I like fights, I don't like. I'm not there to watch a ballet. That's all I'm saying. So,
yeah, but if you're the best fighter in the world and your knuckles and your fists are softer than a Meek Mill mixtape. Well,
he did exactly what he should have done in that fight. Okay. I'm just saying that it's not entertaining. And actually, we got our first fighter in here. Let me bring him in.
What's going on, guys?
What's up?
How's it going? Good, man. You know, I'm sorry I got a little mixed up because it's 7:30 over here.
I know. That's why I sent you the message.
It was 8:30 when I first talked to you, so now it's different.
Yeah, so how was the 15-hour flight?
It was horrible. It sucked, but, you know, we were so happy to get here, man. Now, we came all out here. We want to do this fight. You know, we're really just excited to be here. We've been training real hard since March, you know, so – we're just ready to go out there and perform, you know.
So while you were in flight, we were talking about Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. So before we talk about your career and talk about your fight coming up tomorrow, what do you think about that fight going down?
You know, I know Roy. I trained with his dad, you know. I fought in Island Fights. It's his company, you know. They're really cool people, you know. And they're loved in Pensacola because, you know, I don't know Mike Tyson personally. But you know, I do know Roy, and they're loved in Pensacola, and they do a lot of stuff for the community, and so I'm real excited. This is a fight they've been talking about for a long time. They've been hinting, you know, talking about doing this fight for a long time, so it's cool that they're gonna make it happen. It should be fun, you know. Mike Tyson, he's mature, you know, he's like, you know, he's awesome now. He's a really wise man right now, and it would be good to see, you know, how the fight comes out. Roy Jones is. I've seen his last couple fights. He's still fast. You know, he looks good. You know, Mike Tyson, I haven't seen him fight. So I don't know, you know, I don't have anything. I have seen some of his training videos. He looks great in training. But, I mean, if anything, I'm definitely going to be watching it.
Me too.
Awesome. And how do you feel in heading to your upcoming bout tomorrow? How's the weight cut? How's everything going? How's your training? How's your preparations? What's going through your mind?
The training was good. The preparation was good. The weight cut was actually, I was surprisingly easy. It was my first time fighting at 65. I had to cut a little bit. I didn't really have to cut too much of this fight. You know, maybe the trip really kind of helped me. I pretty much, by the time I got here, I was almost in weight, you know? And when I left Puerto Rico, I was 10 pounds over, but by the time I got here, I was ready to go. I've been training real hard, so I've been preparing my body for it. I was preparing for a bigger cut. So we made it. We're ready to cut. You know, I feel strong. You know, I gained all the weight that I wanted to gain to fight 165. I think I look better than the last time I did for 165. So I just want to, like, all the tweaks to my style, you know, I have that I've made. I just want to go out there and you know, I just want to put it to the test again. This is really what this is about to me. You know, this is a new style of fighting. You know, this is like the Wild West. We're still trying to show who's got the best style and what's going to be the future of the sport, you know, because a lot of the guys they're doing real good right now. They're, you know, not everybody, but a lot of guys, you know, push a lot of pressure. You know, I want to come in, you know, and show like some next level technicians in bare knuckle. You know, I want to show the space for the technicians in this style. So I'm real excited to come out there and show my style off, you know.
Absolutely.
It's my fourth bare knuckle fight, you know, and I'm looking forward to going again.
Yeah, and you're fighting a tough opponent. I mean, the guy you're fighting
is no slouch. I never had easy fights, you know. I never get easy fights, you know. All my fights are always tough. First fight was against Harris Steven, and then my second one was against Jim Allers. I just came off a decision with Palomino. It was a great fight. It was a learning experience for both of us. And I made my adjustments, and I'm ready to go back at it. You know, I thrive in bare knuckle. I love this sport. So I'm trying to carve my position, and I want to be here for a long time. So I'm looking forward to showing out tomorrow.
Did you run to Sheena Star yet?
Oh, yeah, Sheena. Yeah, that's my homegirl. Yeah, I ran into her. Yeah,
that's my girl.
Everybody's out here. The whole crew's out here, you know.
Vince?
Vince is going to be at the show. But I think he's got some, a lot of stuff going on right now. But, you know, everybody that needs to be here is here. And I'm just glad that we made it here. And we're just sitting there, they're hosting the fights. And we get to be back. We're back in business, you know. We're back in it. That's the main thing, you know, that we get to fight again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I started watching bare knuckle boxing because of Sheena Star. I saw her on Ryzen, obviously became friends, and I love Sheena. She's a great girl.
Fighter, you know, she knows a lot of stuff. She always tries to help all the fighters. You know, she's cool. She's an asset to the BKFC, you know. She's part of she's one of the company guys.
So that was my question too. Because I didn't really understand. There was a lot of misconceptions about bare knuckle boxing. One of my boxing coaches, Dan, he was actually training Rico Rodriguez for a bare knuckle boxing bout. I'm like, holy shit, are we taking mixed martial arts back to, you know, bring it back 20 years later where there's bare knuckle and, you know, we're bringing the sport back. We're this is a step back. But bare knuckle boxing, there's so much technique and there's so much to it. You know,
I fell in love with it. I really, after I did my first fight, it was like an in and out thing for me. I know I'm a good boxer, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna use my boxing skills, I'm gonna get paid, and now, you know, once I did it, man, we fell in love with it, and it really is something new. It's the luring of something new. We always say it's like a new girlfriend, you know. We just love to get back in there again, you know.
Get the strange.
It's like we're still trying to figure out what's the best, and not only the best, but the most. It has to be like a style that not only works, but something that's sustainable, you know, where you can make a career out of. Because you can go out there and do two or three good fights and decent and shit, and you can't even come back anymore, you know, because you're
right.
You really mess yourself up in bare knuckle. This is the realest sport in the world, you know. You'd be surprised how much damage you can take in one round in this fight, you know.
Yeah.
So this is real fighting, you know. If you want to be, I want to have, you know, I want to create, you know, I'm trying to define my style. I feel like I've been done pretty good at being like, you know, just not taking too much damage in the style. I do have to make a couple of tweaks because I always fight like there's no time limit. You know, I'm really patient in there. So I know I have to push I have to make my adjustments to this five rounds for now. Hopefully in the future that we do more rounds. I'd actually be willing to do more rounds.
Right.
But you have to make this little tweaks and things and balances, you know, this, and then minutia of where your hands land, what contact points, and, you know, how many elbows are you going to eat with your right hand. So you start changing where you punch at and how you punch, you know, and you'll be surprised how the hand fatigue will come into play fast. Like the guys are just, they'll lose power. You'll be like, man, he's landing a whole bunch of punches, you know, he's like, but their hands is just shot, you know. So you'll be surprised when you get in there, you know, and a lot of it has to do with just how you land your punches, where you land your punches, you know, how you're taking your damage, where, you know, how you defend the punches, you know, it's so technical, you know, so much minutia, you know, it's a lot to love. I love it. You know, for somebody, I've been fighting for my whole life, I started as a boxer, you know, it's like even more, you know, complex. So And I see a lot of potential in him. You know, I really do. So,
oh yeah,
we're here. We're here to prove what we want to do. You know, this, that's really why we're here. You know, we want to try staking the game.
Absolutely. And how were you able to adjust coming from boxing background over to bare knuckle boxing? Because, you know, you can't do this and you know, expect to block boxing gloves, because obviously, you know, you're blocking fists. So obviously you adjust defense and offense.
Yeah, you can't block with your glove. I mean, what I did was I researched a lot. I saw a lot of the fighters. First I saw what a lot of the guys were doing in bare knuckle, you know, and you can tell right away that people, you know, still trying to figure it out. And then I look back at some of the old fights, you know, because that's really what really the biggest point of reference you got is, you know, 100 years ago, guys were making careers out of it, you know. They would fight a whole bunch of rounds and they would make careers out of it, and people, and they had developed styles, and you have to figure out why, you know, why the stance like that, you know, why, you know, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that you can't really, you know, you can't do this like you're saying. If you're going to block a shot to the head, you have to have a high guard. You have to bring them elbows up, you know. You got to make the other guy pay for, if the guy throws a haymaker and he just thinks he could just bullies, you could just boom, hit the elbow, and then he's like, he's going to have to reconsider, you know, his game plan, you know. Guys break their hands in bare knuckle, you know. Just,
right.
I see some of the most aggressive guys that come from other sports, and they you know, they're very aggressive. They come and they just smash their hands, you know, because they don't ever even take that in consideration. They don't even realize that that's going to happen until they get in there and they throw, and they're like, holy shit.
So my question is, you know, between MMA gloves and like boxing gloves and fists, because I was always under the impression that gloves are just there to protect your knuckles and protect your wrists. And it, everything sucks when you get hit, no matter what, everything sucks.
Yeah.
So
yeah. The biggest difference to me is that the punches are more significant. You know, you're not getting, you know, it's, you know, every punch has the potential to end the fight, you know, both ways. You know, the punches are more significant. And I think they're more defining because of the fact that you don't have gloves on, and the nerves, there's more, you know, contact you can make with the nerves that are, you know, that you really can't do with a pillow in your hand. You know, no matter how, even if it's a small MMA glove, like, you really just can't get those bones in there and really hit it, or, you know, and really get that, like, neural knockout, those crazy knockouts that you see in bare knuckle. And because they're not even concussive knockouts, they're just getting that, just boom, and hitting them right on the freaking spot, you know, right on the button, and the guy's just, you know. So it's you have that. It's more raw. It's a raw form of, you know, even the, it's a raw sport. Even the punches, even the fighting is more raw. You know, even when you come out and you feel raw. It's, you know, this is tough. I love it. It's a different experience for sure. And it's not for everybody, but man, you know, I definitely, you know, I love this sport. I'm glad that we were able to get in early and that we have the opportunity to keep doing it. So,
do you think that bare knuckle boxing has a place in like capturing some of the UFC's audience in North America?
Yeah, I mean, and it's not really, I think fight fans, you know, fight, because this is a language, it's like bare knuckle boxing is like a universal language, you know. MMA, there's still a lot of people who don't understand it, you know, like, oh, the ground game is real complex, or even the clinch game, but like two guys punching each other, you know, it's just, you know, it's so easier to you know, relate to and understand, you know, and it is, you know, it's like primal, you know, in a way, and it's something that Puerto Rico, I would love to bring it to Puerto Rico, because Puerto Ricans love the bare knuckle boxing, you know, so, you know, it's just something that there's definitely a place for it. And I think all fight fans are like, not just MMA fans, but really anybody who just loves fighting, you know. I used to love watching all the Irish boys fighting in, you know, in the street with the ref, which is randomly show up, you know, and they duke it out, you know. It's just, that's really what it is, you know. It's the rawest when we're fighting.
Right. And you're a big name in bare knuckle boxing, obviously, with the brand. So you win this. Do you want to call out some names? Do you have somebody in mind that you want to fight?
Man, you know, I always say I would fight anybody.
Caleb Harris.
What you say? Yeah, I want to fight Caleb Harris. but, you know, I'll fight anybody. That's all I was saying. I mean, I would love to get a rematch with, you know, because I'm 1-2 with anybody. You know, I have to earn it. So, because I want to get my wins back. I want to bring my record back up, and I want to deliver some more stunning knockouts and some more memorable moments again in bare knuckle, you know, like we've done before. So that's, you know, I'll fight anybody. And when I say that, I'm serious.
Right. So obviously you're not going to give away any strategy or anything like that, but you're fighting a tough technical person. What's your strategy in layman's terms? Not talking over people's heads, but like, what did you observe of him? What can you take advantage of? Like, do you see anything?
Caleb's a tough guy, and I mean, I'm a technical fighter. I'm gonna take advantage of every mistake that he makes in the fight. You know, I'm gonna try to, you know, I'm gonna spring traps for him. I'm gonna frustrate him, and I'm gonna try to get him running into stuff, and I'm gonna push him around. We're gonna move around. I'm gonna impose my game plan there. You know, and I'm gonna show that I'm the more technical fighter. I'm the technician, and I'm gonna show my skills in this fight. You know, he is a really tough opponent. He has a lot of tenacity. He has a lot of willpower, and he's gonna come in there and he's gonna give everything he got. You know, and my answer to that is gonna be my technical ability and my skills and my reflexes and then my just my unique ability to catch people slipping.
All right, so I have a question from one of my buddies. What was your favorite boxing fight?
My favorite boxing fight?
Yeah.
I mean, I used to enjoy all the Trinidad fights. You know, we used to watch it downtown. You know, we put it on a big screen. But man, one of my favorite, there's so many memorable fights, especially the 80s one, you know, Hagler and Hearns type stuff. That was probably one of my favorite ever watching, because it's just so, it was like, holy crap, you know? That's like serious boxing. But like, let me see. I couldn't really give a specific one.
Who specifically was your, who was your influence?
I used to love Trinidad. When we first started boxing when I was 16, you know, big left hooks, you know, and then just, you know, big shots and just, you know, we always represent Puerto Rico, you know, I'm saying, he was a town hero and, you know, asset to the community and stuff like that. You know, he was an inspiration, you know, to be able to not only use fight and having a powerful fighting technique and you know, but also being able to do a lot of good with it, you know, pass it forward. You know?
All right. So one more question. Who wins, Deontay Wilder or Mike Tyson?
And their prime?
Yeah, in their prime.
Their prime, man, I would, I mean, they both hit hard. I mean, I would, Mike, man, Mike just had such a, when he was in his prime, his style was just so hard to deal with, and he just kept coming, you know, he's just, you know, Mike, man, Mike could have been the greatest fighter of all time, you know. He was a detriment to himself, but he really was, like, the perfect fighter when he was in his prime.
So, yeah, I'm convinced if it wasn't for Robin Gibbons and Mike Tyson would still be dominant all the way to 2000.
What? We lost it. We lost it.
Oh, you lost me? Am I back?
Yeah. Now you say, if it wasn't for what?
If it wasn't for Robin Gibbons and Robin Gibbons' mother, Mike Tyson would be dominant all the way to 2001.
Yeah, that, he would. He, yeah, that's true. I mean, he had a lot of personal stuff, you know, and it's just, you know, sometimes it's like too much too fast, and you know, it's just life, you know. He's a lot wiser man than he was. You know, if he was the man that he was now back then, he'd still be champion, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. And so back to Deontay Wilder, like, and boxers nowadays, because I'm always under the I just want to pick your mind a little bit. I'm always under the impression that like a Deontay Wilder or a Tyson Fury would not be able to survive in the 80s or the 90s. Like, I think personally, Deontay Wilder would never, ever reach Tyson. I thought he would lose to, like, Tony Tucker. And
yeah,
especially in the 90s. And the 90s.
It's just like basketball. You like, watch basketball now, like, man, they would get ate up back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
This is a different game, you know? But, yeah, I agree with you on that, for sure. There's, you know, I think maybe the modernization of it, you know? I don't know.
So who would be your dream fight? Who would you want to fight over anybody? Like a dream fight, past, present, celebrity, doesn't matter. Who would be your dream fight?
Man,
coming with the questions.
You know, I would love to fight bare knuckle in Puerto Rico, you know? If I had a dream fight, you know, because you know, I fought Jim twice. First time we fought, we fought a three round. We fought three rounds, and he caught me in the last round and put me to sleep. I was, you know, with a triangle, you know. And then when I fought him again, he caught me in the first round. He put me to sleep in the first round, bare knuckle, you know. So like, dream fight would be, you know, it's not the priority. I love Jim, but it would be like rematch, you know, after like a 3-4-5 winning streak, in Puerto Rico, you know, and just going out there and just fucking smashing, you know. Bringing it back again, you know.
Yeah, man.
All right. Well, hey, we want to wish you luck on your fight, man. And we're going to let you get out of here so you can get back to doing what you're doing. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Enjoy the fight tomorrow, man. We're going to bring it.
All right.
Caleb's a tough dude, so you know he's going to bring it too.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys.
Thank you much.
Awesome guest, man. Awesome guest.
Well, this guest is going to be even lame. I'm going to be a real lame guest.
Oh, no.
He's going to be way better than me. Alvin's got a ton of personality. So prepare to get bored to death.
Oh, no.
Isaac Flagg, how you doing, brother?
Good. How are you guys?
Good.
Awesome. So my first question is, how you feeling with your weight cut? Everything going down? You finally arrived. How's everything going?
So the weight cut was really actually pretty easy. I think I thought it was going to be a little bit harder in my old age, but it was a good weight cut. And we're at dinner right now in a restaurant, and I'm just replenishing some food. I already had a meal earlier, so things are going. It's a hibachi grill, so chicken and some rice.
Nice.
So yeah.
Awesome, man. How was the transition from UFC? Obviously, you had a great UFC career, and then you transitioned to bare knuckle boxing. How was the transition?
Good. I dig it. So I like, I mean, I love MMA. It's always my base, you know. But bare knuckles suits my lower back a lot better, you know. So and it takes away. Not that I don't love jiu-jitsu, but it was never my strong suit. And this is kind of, you know, this adds the element of being kind of tough and using your hands a lot, you know, which are two things that I guess known for, you know.
Yeah. So how'd you get started in mixed martial arts? What like, and I was just researching you and obviously doing my due diligence. How'd you get started?
A good buddy of mine, Tate Fletcher, we lived together a long time ago, and he took me to a jiu-jitsu gym, and that was actually my base. I didn't even know about striking till a few years later, and I kind of fell in love with that a little bit more. But we went to a jiu-jitsu gym in Santa Fe, New Mexico, with Alberto Crane, and kind of I just fell in love with every aspect of it. You know, I was introduced to MMA through the UFC, obviously, but then fell in love with it when I started doing it.
What was the first UFC fight that you watched?
UFC 1.
You watched the first one.
You gotta remember, I'm old. I'm 40 something, so I've seen the UFCs. So yeah, I mean, it's not like I was there or anything, but yeah, the guys who fought in the first the early UFCs are the guys who I really kind of look up to. I'm also realizing I have a lazy eye. That's okay. Awesome.
It's all good, baby. Yeah, I saw the first UFC 1-2, and it was like a big infomercial for Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. It was like, okay, here's other guys, and then here's Hoyce Gracie, who's going to fucking dollywop all of them. Like, it was just like, such like an infomercial for jiu-jitsu. Was that the reason why you started off, and that's why you started off with jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, jiu-jitsu was the prominent thing that was winning fights at the time, and so that's what we did, you know. It was, we had a really good jiu-jitsu black belt that we kind of started training with, and so that's what I started with. You know, like I said, I discovered striking later, and I was and I fell in love with that a little bit more.
Yeah. And your last fight, you TKO'd Melvin Gellard. Yeah. So it was a big TKO win, and you know, obviously your striking has been much improved and awesome. Like, and what are your plans for this fight?
To win again, I would say win. you know, Luis is a tough dude, so it's gonna, you know, I think we're gonna have a I'm gonna see which Luis shows up, if it's a technical Luis or the Luis who likes to throw down, and we're gonna go from there. But I got a game plan for both of them.
Awesome. So you don't want to get in a gunfight, you know, maybe pick your shots, like kind of like strategically and tactically, like beat them at every turn, right?
Well, I would like that. You know, that's easier said than done, and everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, like Mike Tyson said. So,
yep.
It's you know, and Luis punches people in the face. That's what he's good at.
Awesome. So you fought for UFC, you fought for Strikeforce. Obviously, you started in 2006. Like, how do you feel the MMA game is going, especially because you started off, you know, at the early stages of the game in 2006 when the MMA boom was just happening? How do you feel like fighting at the beginning stages to now, where now it's under the confines of a publicly traded company. I mean, Valcom owns Bellator, WMG owns UFC. Like, what are the differences or major differences between the beginning stages of mixed martial arts to now, where it's pretty much owned by corporations, to be honest with you?
Which is, I mean, it is what it is. I never thought it would get here. So I remember talking to like Cub and Joe Stevenson and a few other guys when a highlight got on ESPN for the first time and thinking that was awesome, you know. I just think that it's starting to look at, I mean, it's still kind of a fringy sport, but the fact that it's looked at as a major sport and like is on ESPN and owned by whoever it's owned by, it's awesome, man. I mean, I fell in love with the sport for a reason, so it's good to see it grow, you know.
Yeah, and one of my first that I actually watched with you was against Mr. Edwards at UFC 150 something. But you fought Edwards; it was a split decision, but it was a fucking war. It was awesome. Like, what was your favorite fight in your career?
Honestly, it was the Jay-Z Cavalcante fight in Strikeforce. Jay-Z was the first like big name that I fought, you know, and he was. I mean, Jay-Z was a killer in Japan, and to go out there, I was nervous as hell, and to go out there and put on the performance that I did, you know, I didn't finish him, but I definitely beat him in rounds two or three pretty solidly, and I really found my groove, you know, so that still is my favorite fight, just because Jay-Z is a super, I mean, he's a stud, you know, for that to be my first name and then to get that win was really exciting for me.
So obviously you're very successful in bare knuckle boxing, undefeated. Would you ever make the switch over back to mixed martial arts, or is this your home? Is this where you want to stay, and this is where you want to continue winning and dominating and having a successful career?
I like dominating stuff, so I'll stay here. You know, I mean, I also like fighting. So I'm always open to fighting MMA, but I'm happy with this right now, and I'm happy with where I'm at. You know.
Yeah. And do you see a stopping point? Obviously, you know, everyone loves the boom of the crowd. Everyone loves the cheers of the crowd. Everybody loves getting that win and that next rush and that next training camp. Do you ever see a stopping point for yourself?
Yeah, in a couple of years, I definitely want to stop, you know. And, you know, there were some things like I did that personally that I wanted to make sure that when I left MMA, kind of, I wanted to personally come back and make sure that I did some things for myself. And so when I feel like I've achieved those, then I'm done.
Yeah. And you know, doing research, you know, you everybody has their own battles, and you won every single one of them inside the cage, outside the cage. How do you feel that you evolved not only as a fighter, but also as a person
throughout your career? I think just like life, with the fighting, you know, you have to constantly stay evolving. And if you don't, you're kind of slowly dying, you know. So everything that I'm doing these days is to evolve either personally or professionally with the sport, you know. But especially personally, that the more and more I try to grow personally, it seems like it affects my professional stuff a lot better. So, you know, I always feel like if you're not changing and growing, then you're kind of slowly dying, you know.
Yeah. I have a question from my friend Chris. So my friend Chris asks, who was your favorite mixed martial artist?
Mine? So I really, getting to fight Eves was awesome because I liked Eves. He had a really good knockout. Cowboy Cerrone and Cub Swanson are two of my favorites because they're Cowboy Cerrone and Cub Swanson. You know, Cub was killing it. You know, Cowboy's always exciting to watch, and Cub is awesome to watch, you know. So it's really weird. I always pick guys who I know or who I'm buddies with, but I also enjoy watching them fight, you know.
Yeah. Did it break your heart as much as it broke my heart when Cowboy Cerrone lost that fight to Conor McGregor?
Oh, yeah. I really thought Cowboy was going to knock McGregor out, and it just really didn't go the way I went. So that was frustrating, and it's heartbreaking to watch anybody that you know lose, but then especially a guy like, you know, I mean, Cowboy's found, you know, his thing with his being a dad and stuff, and it's hard to watch that when you find your niche and then can't, and then lose, you know?
Yeah. So what is next in your career? Like, you get past this fight, you get a win. What is next for you?
Go up to Taos, New Mexico and take a vacation. But after that, it's just getting back in the gym and again, trying to, you know, trying to get better, better at whatever I decide to be doing, you know, whether it's a fight game or whatever, just, you know, especially in the gym professionally, there's some things that I still want to work on. I'm not going to be happy till I feel like I've perfected a few things, and I'm far from doing that, you know?
Yeah. So after you call things a wrap, after you wrap up the career, what's the next stage of your life? Do you want to own a gym? Do you want to teach? What exactly do you want to do or accomplish?
No. So I do home remodel stuff, and I actually just want to do that because it's making things pretty, and it's not fight related. I just want to be a fight fan after this and build some houses.
No shit. Do you have a website? Like any place that people can go?
What's that?
Do you have a website for your remodeling business? Do you have any place that people can go to see it?
Yeah, it's Robert Jones Construction, and it's look on Facebook. He's going to be building a website, but he's got his Facebook up, and then it's me and him work together, and hopefully the company keeps growing.
That's well, awesome.
Hit me up. I can build websites for you.
Yeah, you can definitely build websites.
I'm dropping you guys.
Uh-oh.
Okay. All right.
Are you back? Hey, okay. So
I hate to be a jerk. Yeah. I hate to be a jerk, but my food is here.
Oh, no,
you
no.
guys mind if I cut this a little bit?
So no, go ahead.
Yeah,
okay. Thank you, guys.
No problem. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, man. We'll hopefully talk to you guys after this a little bit more in length.
Yep. Maybe sounds great.
Awesome. So. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks a lot.
All right, guys.
Bye.
Yep. Have a good night.
Good night.
Have a good night, man. And Elvin Brito, what do you think about the guests?
Oh, I think they were both awesome, and I love bare knuckle boxing because it's stand and bang. So you know,
I didn't get it for the longest time until again I saw in the gym that you know, training out of Hoboken and Danny, my coach Danny in boxing. He was helping Rico Rodriguez. He was actually in Rico Rodriguez's corner. I'm like, Danny, this is a former UFC champion. You know, why be involved in a sport that's going to bring back mixed martial arts 20 decades earlier? You know, like, well, why be involved in this where, you know, this is the same shit that John McCain shut down. So I had my general concerns. And then I saw Sheena Starr, you know, compete. And I saw Rico Rodriguez compete. And they relatively keep it safe. You know, they have the wrists taped up. They have the knuckles taped up. They have everything, all the safety measures, because I'm under the impression that I got hit with boxing gloves, fists, you know, MMA gloves. They all suck the same. You know, everything's to protect the wrists. That's what it comes down to. And, you know, watching the sport and how it grew, there's some excitement there. There's something there. You know, it's definitely a niche product.
I like it because, you know, unlike regular boxing, they can fight in the clinch. You know, I've seen it where they'll, you know, somebody grabs the head and, you know, gives an uppercut. So it's definitely different than, you know, the rules are different than boxing and obviously way different than MMA. So I think it's a great in between for somebody like me.
So. Yeah. Couple misconceptions I have, you know, like, is someone gonna fucking die in there? Like, yeah, and then I saw the proc, and then I saw, so I have a very funny story. So Sheena Starr was like, you gotta watch my fight, just wait until you see me come out. So I have a bunch of buddies over and we're watching the fights, and I order it, it's on my television. I saw Sheena Starr walk out. She has this big t-shirt that says Hillary Clinton's a cunt.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh,
she got a lot of fans, I think, from that t-shirt.
Yeah. So fucking we're watching it. Of course she wins, and then they show like a big snapshot of her raising her hands. She's like, oh fuck yeah. And then as soon as she wins, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna text her congratulations. As soon as I pick up my phone, bling, notification, bling, some bare knuckle boxer says Hillary Clinton's a cunt. And I'm like, oh my god. And you see all these people hopping on her like, holy shit, a fucking Republican, fuck this bitch. And like, they're going right after her. Like, she got so much fucking flack for that. And then afterwards, she turned it around because she actually donated the t-shirt to Marines and all that good stuff. So Crazy, man. That's and nice. Charlie Wade. What did you say, bro?
No, no, that's nice. I remember hearing that story. So
it's good people, man. It's good people. Gotta have her on the show, by the way.
Yeah, I think the Bare Knuckle 11 is gonna be great. Thanks, Charlie, for the comment.
Thank you, brother. I think it's gonna be a great show, you know, and I think it's loaded with talent. I think Elvin is absolutely a marquee name. I think Isaac is absolutely a marquee name. And it brings legitimacy to the sport that you have all these former UFC guys in there. And I see the concept now, considering Rico Rodriguez fought there, who's a former UFC champion, and obviously a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, a very good black belt and a Jiu-Jitsu practitioner. So you have all these legitimate names loaded into the sport. It's just going to add legitimacy to it. Just like Royce Gracie at UFC 1, he added legitimacy, you know, being a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu black belt, you know, he definitely added legitimacy to the UFC. So, no, I'm excited to watch it. I'm excited to watch what Bare Knuckle Boxing has to offer.
Oh, me too. Was there any of the other fights that interest you on the on the event?
It's hard to say, really, because I'm new to the sport. And it just like a new concept or a new promotion or a new brand, you know, it takes time for me to be invested in some names and be invested in some fights. You know, I'm watching strictly as a fan, you know, and strictly as a an onlooker, you know, just like a lot of people that watch mixed martial arts. They don't know any of the fighters that are fighting. I know them, but they don't know them. I'm the same way with bare knuckle boxing, where the rules are reversed now, where I'm not an expert in bare knuckle boxing. So, you know, I'm waiting to watch these guys put it on. And bare knuckle boxing does a very good job at marketing their fighters, which is the most important part, too, of any sport, is marketing those fighters in order to make the brand money. And that, I think that's what they're doing right, is they're investing a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of money in all these different athletes to start building up the sport. And UFC and Bellator, they're oversaturated with talent. They're oversaturated with fighters. There's how many fighters in the UFC roster? Like a billion?
I think it's maybe 30 now.
Yeah. There's a shit ton of fighters on the UFC roster, and not a lot of people will know the names. And, you know, maybe an MMA fan like me will know the names, but not a lot of casual viewers will know the names. And you throw Reebok on there, and you throw clothes on there like that look the same and everything like that. You know, it's very hard for them to build their own brand. But just like I brought up with Sheena Storm, who wore like Hillary Clinton's a cunt, she's building up her own brand, and you know they're letting their fighters build up their own brand and market themselves. And you know, I see a lot of value. You know, I see a lot of potential there. It just depends if, you know, if they keep going the way they are, because, you know, I became a fan. I don't know much about it, but I'm researching. I'm definitely going to watch tomorrow, and we'll see what happens. And Charlie Wade said, keep your eyes peeled for John McAllister versus T. Cummings. It's going to be fireworks. Don't blink. I'll definitely pay attention to that. If he said it, I'm definitely going to pay attention to you. I'm actually going to make a note of that right now. Actually watch that fight. And coming on later is going to be Eric Anders, UFC veteran.
I messaged him. He should be coming on pretty shortly. He's a pretty interesting guy. He's kind of had a pretty interesting life. So,
fuck yeah, man. He's also a father too, which they're also involved with the sport. Which I'm going to ask him about that. Like, how does he navigate those? You know, he's been through the process. He knows about the weight cuts, the brutal weight cuts. He knows about going in there competing. You know, people watching, eyeballs watching, either if you win or lose, they're going to have an opinion about you. You know, his young kids are going through the sport and going through the process. He's actually been through it. You know, how does that affect him as a coach and as a father, you know, how to separate the two? So I can't wait to talk to him about that. I'm pretty excited. Just as excited I am as Cormier versus Cormier versus Stipe, which is always going to be a fucking killer card. I gotta get Cormier back on the show. I actually interviewed Cormier on my podcast, and he was a badass all himself.
Yeah, just you keep saying you're going to be able to get him on, but I haven't seen any follow through on that.
Very true. Very true.
I'd like to have a Thug Rose back on too.
Thug Rose, I want to talk to again. Shout out to Thug Rose.
Somebody can get in contact with her. Let us know.
Yeah, Thug Rose was a cool girl. Pat Barry, also a cool guy. And yo, Daniel Cormier versus Stipe. That third fight's interesting for a couple different reasons. One, Cormier beat him the first time, and there were some people that said it was an early stoppage, but I highly disagree with that. And then second off, you know, the second fight, Stipe absolutely fucking rocked those belts. So I don't know. Who do you got for that fight?
I don't know on that one, man.
If Cormier comes in with the same strategy, he will beat Stipe. He got careless. He was winning the rounds, and then he let that chin out, and then boom. You know, it lights out in 20 seconds. As soon as you veer away from that strategy, that picture-perfect strategy, you're bound to be in trouble. And that's the beauty about mixed martial arts is you veer away from a strategy, you veer away from what's working, you know, it could be lights out in any second. You know, and I think personally, I thought Stipe got lucky. I thought it was a lucky shot, just like people claim that, you know, Daniel Cormier got a lucky shot in the first fight. And, you know, that's what makes the third fight so interesting. Where does it go? You know, both of them are very good wrestlers. Daniel Cormier, a former Olympian. Man, I'm excited for that fight. So that's going to be on the horizon for UFC 252?
Yes.
Yeah. Who else is on that card?
Well, let me see here. Sorry about that. I'm just messaging Eric. It sounds like he's finishing up with some dinner or something. So we got to wait just a few minutes on him.
You can eat, brother. You can eat.
Oh, yeah. We got this one right here.
Dude, fucking Sean O'Malley, man. What's your opinion on Sean O'Malley from what you saw?
I think so. What's the rapper's name?
That fucking douchebag.
Tikal 6ix9ine. What is it?
Is that his name? Yeah, that's his name.
Something like Continue. That. I'm like, this reminds me of the MMA version of that. As far as, I mean, you got the crazy hair, smokes weed, blah blah blah. you know, he's in a sport of a lot of legends, and you know, I don't know if it's just to make a name. I know he's decent at fighting. I'll tell you that. Like, you know, so far what I've seen, he's backing up, you know, his persona as far as you know. But
there is no slouch, my friend.
So
there is no slouch.
You know, I'm a big hip hop guy, right? So, okay. So I always put things in the context of music. And
right on.
You know, some of these other guys remind me of, you know, the legends, you know, Silva and all that remind me of what would be like Tupac to me, right? And then he reminds me of that 6ix9ine guy. You know, it's the new generation. I don't understand it. So, you know, I'm 43. It just doesn't make any sense to me, the craziness. But it's definitely getting him some attention, and you know, in this world of you know, social media and all that, it's going to sell tickets. So, and that's yes, winning is a lot of it, but selling tickets is a huge part of this game too. So I can't knock it too much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But Takeshi 6ix9ine, whatever the fuck his name is. Takeshi 6ix9ine.
I don't know.
Is that what the kids listen to? Really?
Some of them, I guess.
Listen, that motherfucker looks like a box of Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, it's he's something else.
I don't glorify snitches, man. We grew up in different generations. You grew up with Tupac. Exactly. I grew up with Tupac, and this guy's a fucking snitch, and somehow back on the streets. And
oh, he'd be clowning. That's for sure.
He's down with the clown. You know, that fucking prick. I can't believe they released him out of prison. That guy deserves to be fucking shot. Just saying. If you snitch on your fellow rappers, shit. Like, that guy needs to be locked away for a long time. He still sells records. He still makes records.
Well, it's funny because it's one of those things where he's here it is. thanks. It's one of the guys from Three Beards. Snitch 6ix9ine.
Harmon, yo, shout out to Three Beards. Fucking love their podcast. Those guys are the best. And that guy's a fucking snitch. He's absolutely right. Harmon knows. Harmon knows what I'm talking about. I won't listen to his music because, again, I don't want the analytics. You know, I don't want to even comment and say how much of a fucking pussy he is and say how much of a snitch he is because I don't want to give him the views. I don't want to support a fucking snitch. And that's what's popular. That's the rap music that's popular. Back in topic, I'm sorry. Sean O'Malley is never going to be in the same not a mumble rapper. He's not a bitch. You know, like, but he's got a tough task ahead of him. Gets no play from me. Charlie Wade, I completely agree with you. Harmon, I love you too, brother. Absolutely. Fuck 6ix9ine. Take shoes. Top shoes.
Whatever the kid. Yeah, whatever it is. I don't know.
I got. What? How do you pronounce the name? Takashi.
Takashi. It sounds like somebody sneezed, is all I know. So,
giant fucking vagina in my book. I would never fucking listen to him. I listen to Tupac. If Tupac was still alive, he would be unemployed working at McDonald's. Just saying. Just for the fucking record. I don't know what the kids listen to. Mumble rap? Like, anybody could do mumble rap. You could do mumble rap. The guy has no talent whatsoever. Sean O'Malley has talent. He'll be fighting against a very tough opponent, Bura. But Takeshi 6ix9ine, fuck that guy.
Fuck that. I agree.
Fuck that pussy. Unbelievable. Unfucking believable. I'm surprised so many good fights are happening under the confines of an ongoing pandemic. They got a good system going on with bare knuckle boxing going to Puerto Rico, UFC going to Abu Dhabi. Yo, so that's the fight.
So who we got?
Yo, you had to bring that up.
Yeah, Masvidal or McGregor?
Shook Book MMA. Will that fight actually happen though between McGregor and Masvidal?
I don't know. It's in the talks.
It'll be fireworks, my friend. It'll be definitely fireworks.
Talking about the BMF belt.
Not even fucking needed, my friend. You have two talented guys. You have two talented fighters fighting in there. No gimmicks. We don't need any trash talking whatsoever. You know, we don't need any media. Keep everybody away. Don't dilute the sport. We're going to see two top MMA practitioners going at it. Yeah, I'm torn because it's obviously going to be a stand-up fight. Maybe Masvidal will try to take him down if Conor McGregor starts getting some momentum. I don't see Conor McGregor shooting in unless he's in trouble, like he shot him with Nate Diaz, which is the most mind-blowing idea that you would ever come up with, considering Nate Diaz is a fucking crazy black belt. But right. That's neither here nor there. But you know, it's going to be a stand-up war. Someone's going to get knocked down. Someone's going to get clean clocked. Somebody's going to go down. That's going to be a good fight. But do they book it? Do they risk two of their top-tier talents, put them against each other, and have one of their top talents, somebody that's making money, like Masvidal? He was advertising UFC 4. He's on the cover. Conor McGregor.
I think it happens. I do. As long as McGregor puts his, you know, gets his money, I think it'll happen. McGregor loves the money. Masvidal needs some redemption, so I think it'll happen, and then maybe back to Usman.
Yeah, I just don't think they risk it. I don't think they risk two of their marquee names because UFC and we talked about it, where MMA is so oversaturated, where it's very hard to break away. And Masvidal, after years and years, first fighting in the backyard with Kimbo Slice, and God rest his soul. Fucking love Kimbo and his son too. His son, great guy. And I you know, his journey was so long and so hard. If it wasn't for that knee, nobody would have noticed him, but he got that knee, he got eyeballs, and he ran with it with charisma. And then you have Conor McGregor,
right?
Obviously he lost to Khabib. He He lost to Floyd Mayweather. You know, he right now, you know, and of course he won against Donald Cerrone, but, you know, people consider that a wash considering Conor McGregor was supposed to win that fight by all onlookers, not MMA fans, because I thought Donald Cerrone had a very good chance. Yeah, I don't think, because these guys broke away and now they're marquee names and now people outside the MMA community actually know them, I don't think that they place them against each other, because they're both making the company money, and Masvidal is coming off a loss. Conor McGregor is coming off of two losses in two different sports. Why would you fucking, like, you know, place them together where one of the marquee names has to be eliminated? One's going to look stupid in front of the biggest MMA audience on the planet, because everyone's going to order that pay-per-view. Why would you fucking do it? Dana White has some huge balls if he does it. Just saying.
So who do you think ducks the fight?
Who do you think ducks the fight?
If you think it's not going to happen. I mean, are you thinking it's not going to happen because of the UFC not wanting it to happen, or because of one of the fighters?
I think we talk about this a lot and I talk about it a lot, that MMA is very, very different under the confines of a publicly traded company. So, and I love Harmon's comment that Mayweather's the money fight, and that's fucking hilarious, because that'll always be true. Mayweather is bigger than any sport, you know, and that's how it's always going to be. He's retired undefeated. He's always going to be bigger than any sport. So, love you, Harmon. But American Top Team is not going to back down, and Masvidal is definitely not going to fucking back down. There's absolutely no way. So that's for one. The contract signed, Masvidal, he signed it yesterday. He's just that guy. He's just that street dude that doesn't fear any challenge whatsoever. Conor McGregor, you know, he knows his brand. He knows his brand worth. He has a whiskey company. Proper 12, you know, might be different strokes for different folks. I'm not a big fan of it. I love whiskey. I'm not a big fan.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, well, you're a whiskey guy. Fucking know that better than anybody.
But I don't really like American or Irish whiskey, so.
Right.
I'm more of a Scotch guy, like peaty, smoky Scotch.
But I think Conor McGregor, he knows that he needs a big fight to actually, you know, get back. You know, Donald Cerrone's not going to get the job done. When you beat a Donald Cerrone, you're supposed to beat a Donald Cerrone to the non-MMA community. You're supposed to beat Donald Cerrone because Conor McGregor hyped up as a superhero. He was supposed to beat Donald Cerrone. I think it comes down to WMG again. Under they're traded on Wall Street. They are a corporation. They're going to look at these two guys and say, "Well, Masvidal brings me money. McGregor brings me money. Why am I going to risk one of their brands that bring us money? Why am I going to risk losing one of them where their marquee name goes down and risk that? Because MMA is so predictable. It's not like the WWE where everything's planned and scripted." Why lose one of my marquee names? Conor McGregor, knock him out in 30 seconds, and Masvidal looks stupid. And then you have people in the MMA community saying, oh, well, Masvidal was just all hype and knocked out a aging fucking Ben Askren, and that's the reason why he's in that place that he's in, and Nate Diaz has never been a contender. And then the non-MMA community will follow the more knowledgeable guys and say, okay, well, Masvidal sucks then. Like these guys say it, obviously it has to be believed. And Masvidal knocks out Conor McGregor. I think the world's light on fire, and I think everybody goes fucking crazy. You know, worlds collide, and you know, Armageddon, because everyone's gonna go fucking insane if Conor McGregor gets knocked out. Because that'll be three fights in a row. That's the final nail in the coffin in the perspective of both the MMA community and the non-MMA community. Because the last time he won a fight was what, 2016?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, the last time we won a fight was in New York City, in Madison Square Garden. That's the last time we won a fight. So I don't think American Top Team, with their collection of big dick bandits, will ever run away from a challenge. I don't think Conor McGregor, who wants that big fucking win to rise his name up the rankings, I don't think he runs away from a challenge either. And neither is those guys in Ireland.
Yeah, but Conor is supposedly retired, right? Or do you think it's just a ploy? If he gets a couple more fights, he'll get back in.
Fuck me in the beer.
I think he just is sitting on the sidelines waiting for, you know, a money fight to come along. And as soon as that comes along, he'll jump in. And I think that's what this Masvidal fight could be.
But you have all these people that want retirement. And I think it's because there's no money. It's back to the good old days that Gabe and I and Chuck.
You got your boy back in the studio, so I'm gonna bring him in.
Please.
It's your boy. Andrew.
All right, what's going on, fellas?
What's going on, brother?
All right, not much. Just living another day in paradise.
Yeah, man.
Enjoy the pizza?
I just picked it up. I haven't even got a chance to eat it yet.
Man, we're taking you away from pizza. I'm so sorry about that, brother. But thank you for coming on. Yeah, man. So we're just talking about, and obviously, UFC fighter, badass in both middleweight and light heavyweight. We're talking about Conor McGregor, Masvidal. Does he even happen?
Yeah, maybe. You know, I think that, you know, Conor says that he's retiring and whatnot, but you know,
he's looking for the money fight.
What's that?
I think he's looking for the money fight, and that's going to be the biggest money in the game.
I'm not really sure if he really cares about titles and belts and legacy. I think he's trying to, you know, grab some money and, you know, keep it moving. So, yeah, I think Masvidal, McGregor would draw a lot. I think the numbers will be right on both sides. So, yeah. I don't think Usman is going to fight Masvidal again for a rematch. So Masvidal might as well go get his money.
Not anytime soon, anyway.
Yeah. So from your perspective, and as a UFC competitor and as an MMA veteran, what do you see more that's most important? You know, the money fight, gain that big money grab, or the legacy, and or does it like kind of like intermingle where you know you're gonna get that, you're gonna chase that legacy, that great right legacy, and money's gonna just come with it? Or what's your opinion on your UFC career?
Man, I think it's a little bit of both, because you're not gonna get a money fight if nobody knows you. So you have to win a bunch of fights and you know kind of be a household name so that you get that draw. So I think that's what McGregor did. And you know, Masvidal has been in the game forever and a day, so
Right,
I think they go hand in hand. I don't think you just get to show up and have a money fight or a big money fight unless you're like a, I don't know, unless like Floyd Mayweather, for example, wants to do MMA. And yes, of course, you know, he's got a certain number that he has to fight for, or he's not going to fight. So, but again, you know, he did his work in boxing. So, you know, you can't have one without the other, I don't think.
So you helped the great state of Alabama beat the Texas Longhorns for the 2009 championship in football. What made you veer your career away from maybe potentially going to the NFL or playing professional football over to mixed martial arts?
You know, a lot of people, they think that, you know, I just said, okay, I'm done with football. I'm going to go do MMA now. And that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, I played football for as long as I can and try to make it as far as I can. And, you know, when I just saw that it wasn't going to be the NFL, I didn't want to play anymore. So I, you know, came back to Alabama, did the 9-to-5 thing for a while. And, man, I really just went to the gym just looking to blow off some steam, you know, found myself being frustrated, you know, getting fat. And, man, just wanted to blow off some steam. And what better way to do that than to punch and kick things? So, early on, you know, I ran into Walt Harris, and that was my first sparring experience. And, man, I was hooked ever since.
Right. So obviously you start off in the amateurs where you amass a 13-3 record. What was the fundamental differences between playing football, which is obviously you're hitting each other for four quarters in comparison to mixed martial arts? What do you say is the biggest fundamental difference from a, you know, a mental standpoint and a physicality standpoint?
Man, you know, in football, you know, you got a helmet, shoulder pads, leg pads and stuff. So, man, you really don't think twice about running full speed and diving in and tackling somebody. But in MMA, man, there's nothing
but you.
A glove, which is essentially a sock wrapped around your hands. So, the only thing you have is a cup and a mouthpiece. So, you know, I guess the protective gear is the biggest difference. But outside of that, you know, it's just you and one other person in the cage. And in football, it's, you know, you got, there's 22 other people or 21 other people on the field. So, you know, if I take a playoff or somebody takes a playoff, there's somebody else that can, you know, pick up the slack, so to speak. In MMA, man, if you take you know, even a second off, you know, that could be the end of the fight.
Right. And did you start off wrestling while you were playing football, or did you do high school wrestling, any type of martial art growing up while playing football, or was it just strictly football and then you just fell into this?
Man, I got JV level experience wrestling. You know, after my freshman year of high school, we moved to another high school that didn't have wrestling. So, you know, I wrestled up until my freshman year and then nothing after that.
Yeah. So you fought for Valor and then you got the call up to Bellator. What was the nerves like, you know, heading into your, you know, first professional bout all the way to Bellator, which obviously is one of the biggest stages. What were your nerves like in comparison to obviously playing, you play in the championship game against the Texas Longhorns, big crowd, everyone cheering and chanting your name. Like, what were the nerves like in comparison, you know, when you first fought for Bellator and, you know, the first major organization that you fought for?
Man, you know, to be honest, I really didn't have any nerves fighting. I was definitely more nervous. I can remember getting nauseous and stuff before football games, not even a national championship, but, you know, maybe like Louisiana Lafayette or something that didn't even matter, you know. And I remember getting nauseous before those games. But MMA, you know, I just feel so right at home doing it, and I'm always confident in my preparation, what I've done. And I really like the aspect that it's just me in there, and I don't have to rely or depend or try to do more than I need to do to make up for somebody else. So to be honest, I've always felt more at home fighting and less nervous and all the, like, the butterflies and stuff.
Right. And you're fighting in two different divisions where, you know, light heavyweight obviously is dominant with John Jones, middleweight, you know, they have their ruler and their king. Like, what made you want to return to middleweight? And obviously you have had a successful career in both and had your share of successes. What made you want to return to middleweight?
I don't know. It's just, you know, what they offer me, you know, middleweight 205, it doesn't matter to me. You know, I'll fight whoever, whenever, at whatever weight. But, you know, I think for my skill set, I think I'm better at middleweight just because, man, the guys at 205, they're a lot bigger. They can take more, they hit harder. And at middleweight, you know, it's just the opposite. They don't hit as hard. I don't really think there's too much of a speed difference, you know, based on the guys that I fought in both divisions. And, you know, whenever I hit them, they seem to wear it a lot more than the 205ers do.
Great. And have you been contacted for your next fight, or have you been in talks with the UFC when you're going to next appear?
I haven't. You know, I just had eye surgery about 6-7 weeks ago. I'm still recovering from that. And, yeah, I really haven't done much training since the fight.
Right. So with the, you know, under the confines of the current pandemic, are there a couple concerns that you might have? You have beautiful family. You know, obviously they're doing Fighter Island and everything like that. Is that a major concern going into training camp, going and competing? Is that a concern that lingers in your head, especially when you do come back after surgery?
Man, not even a little bit. You know, the whole – When Corona was at its peak here, you know, I was getting ready for a fight. I was in the gym training and all that other stuff. So, you know, for someone like me and my family, you know, it doesn't seem to, like, you know, the effects of COVID don't seem to be that, you know, that big. So, you know, I just felt like if I caught it, then, you know, I would get over it like the chicken pox and keep it moving. So I wanted to make some money and did what I had to do to be able to fight. And yeah, I'm not, you know, mad about it or upset or anything like that. So it is what it is.
I seen your two boys in the geese. Are they going to be following in the footsteps of dad, or?
Man, you know, I don't know. You know, they're young. My oldest turns 11. The other one just turned 9. So. You know, they're super impressionable when they're kids, so they see me doing it, and, you know, they just want to do what I do. But, you know, as they get older, you kind of see their personality kind of emerge a little bit, and, you know, them express interest in other things, like wrestling, football, soccer, things like that. And, you know, I tell them, you know, play every sport that you can while you're young. Find out what you're good at, what you like, and even if you don't, like, you're not the best, like, the skills from soccer that you pick up in soccer, they're going to help you with boxing and everything else, like all
in life.
They play into each other. So, you know, they both seem like they want to be athletes. So, you know, I tell them play every sport, just develop, be an athlete. And then when you're a little bit older, you can like specialize in something.
Right.
So how do you separate yourself from father, also as a coach? Because, you know, you have your young boys who, you know, they're obviously competing. They're learning about the fundamentals of the game. How do you separate yourself from a competitor who's still on your journey and still on your career and separate yourself as a father and coach? Is it a lot of pressure? Do you feel like, you know, like the weight cuts? Like, my dad was a wrestler. So, you know, first time I tried weight cutting, I ended up in a hospital, you know, lucky me, right? Like wrestling. So like, do you try, like, you know, step in, say, okay, don't do this, you know, don't do, like, how do you separate the two, or do you coach them in any sort of regards with that?
A little bit, you know. I'm not like their full-time coach, just because, like, you know, I want that separation of, like, I don't want every time they compete, it's me, like, coaching them and stuff. You know, they need other coaches. Because, you know, they say a lot of the same things that I say, you know, not even necessarily about, like, you know, the sport, but in life and whatnot. And so, you know, it's good for them to hear the same things that I say from other people, especially other people they look up to, like a coach, like a wrestling coach, a jiu-jitsu coach, or whatever. So
you're just dad.
I try to stay out of that coaching role. Obviously, you know, they ask me, you know, what do you think about this, or what about this move, and this, that, and the third. And, you know, then I voice my opinion if it's solicited. But if they don't ask me, you know, they're kids. I want them to have fun. I don't want them to like, not like the sport because dad's always trying to coach them and whatnot. And, you know, I do this, you know, like the boys wrestled, and, you know, I can't help but listen and watch, you know, the other parents when their kid is competing, and, you know, just like the expectation of some of their parents,
right,
versus their kids, is you know, it's mind boggling how, you know, how big that that space is. And you know, I look at the parent, I'm just like, man, you expect your kid to be able to do this? You could never do it. So how could you, you know, expect, you know, be mad at your kid for he can't do it? He got the same genetics and, you know, stuff that you got, and, you know, he probably learned from you. You know, watching you and stuff, you know, probably never, you know, coached in wrestling or whatnot, but, you know, I don't want to be that dad. You know, I just want to be there, enjoy my kids, watch them compete, and, you know, just enjoy watching them do whatever it is that makes them happy.
Right. And they had a lot of success, and it's due to great parenting and a great guy like you. So back to your career. Is there anybody in the middleweight division that's in your gun sight? Anybody that you want to actually fight? Somebody to somebody that you think is going to be a good matchup to you know, heighten your career?
Man, you know, because I'm not able to fight right now, I haven't even looked at the landscape of the middleweight division, so I don't even know who's available, who's ranked where, and who's able to fight. Who, you know, who also just had surgery and is recovering. So, man, I'm not even paying attention or to any of that stuff. But whenever I get that clearance from the doctor, then, you know, I'll go through and, you know, see what I think is, you know, a good fight for me. You know, definitely a guy who doesn't want to fight off his back foot. Maybe a guy who moves forward, you know, kind of gives the same pressure that I give, because I think those are the exciting fights. You know, it's boring to, you know, watch me fight somebody who's moving backwards the whole time. So, you know, I don't want to fight those guys anymore. So, you know, we'll find a guy, or, you know, hopefully they offer me somebody who, you know, moves forward like I do.
Cool, man. So my buddy at Charlie asks, so Roy Jones Jr. versus Mike Tyson, who do you got?
Man, I got to see what kind of condition Roy Jones is in, man. You know, we've seen Mike Tyson, you know, hitting bads
with some fury.
Kings MMA guy, what's his name? Rafael Cordero. And, you know, I got to see what kind of training, you know, what's his name? Roy Jones, you know, I think he got knocked out in his last fight, right? First time he got knocked out.
So yeah, he did.
I think that's Mike's chance. Is I think the power is the last thing to go, and he probably still got a whole lot of it. So, I feel like Roy Jones was an attribute-based boxer. He was
a fighter that you model after, a fighter that you have.
Say what?
Yeah. So is there like a boxer or a particular fighter that you actually looked up to, or a fighter that you watch? You said this is a sport that I can do.
Not really. You know, I just got into the sport, and you know, just I'm me. You know, I don't think it would do any good for me to like emulate like Deontay Wilder or Anthony Joshua because I'm not built like them. I don't move like them, and you know, I just go out there and do me.
So when my buddies ask, would you ever do bare knuckle boxing?
Man, everything's got a price. You know, some of the the payouts that I'm seeing or hear some of these other fighters get, that you know, it's not outside the realm of possibility.
Mm. Awesome. So you know, obviously with kids that are impressionable that are in the sport, what can you pass down, or what knowledge coming from football, going to mixed martial arts, what knowledge can you pass down to the younger generation and the generation that's coming up? Because you're a hybrid athlete. I mean, you did JV wrestling in high school. You went from football and MMA. You got the entire MMA experience where you're a hybrid athlete. You started off in 2015 as a professional. So what can you pass down to the younger generation of the sport that want to come into mixed martial arts?
Outwork everybody. You know, I think in anything in life, you know, sports, the business world, or, you know, if you're running your own business or whatever, I think if you try to outwork everybody, do all the things that they won't do, man, that's the best chance of being successful, I think. There's a lot of guys out there that are just phenomenal athletes, and, you know, some guys can just wake up in the morning and run a 4.3 in the 40, you know. But those guys are so few and far between. And even if that guy woke up and, you know, tried to outwork everybody, he'd probably run a 4.2. You know, so just maximize your potential and outwork everybody.
Awesome, man. So before we leave you, is there anything that you want to say? Any sponsors you want to plug? Anybody that you want to shout out to?
Man, big shout out to Rev Gear, Infinite CBD, and NutraFX. You know, all these things, you know, the CBD for inflammation and recovery and whatnot. Rev Gear, obviously you need gear to train and to do what I do. And NutraFX, you know, the supplements, you know, just kind of give you a little boost and when you're feeling tired and whatnot, you know, pre-workouts, protein, you know, things that, you know, also help you recover and be a better athlete.
Awesome, man. Hey, Eric. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Thank you for talking about your career. You know, I look forward to seeing your next fight. You're the man, brother. Thank you very much for coming on.
Man, appreciate you guys for having me.
No problem. Thanks a lot, man.
Bye. Eric Andrews, baby. That's the man. Recovered from eye surgery. He's back in business, baby. Can't wait. I can't wait to see him fight again. Dude.
Yeah, me neither.
The guy's a fucking animal. That guy is a monster. I can't wait to see him back. Dropping down to middleweight, you know, he's going to cause some problems for that weight division. I'm telling you.
I agree.
I can't wait.
Well, so, I think it was a good show.
I think so. We had Gabe missing. Obviously, he went on a family vacation. And big shout out to Gabe. And, you know,
can't wait to finally get Justin on here.
Yeah, we need fucking Justin, man. We absolutely need fucking Justin. So Justin is the cameraman for Titan FC. And, of course, obviously he's working tonight, you know, being Titan FC. You better go on UFC Fight Pass, motherfuckers. I want you all to order UFC Fight Pass. I'm telling you. You're going to get some great fights on there. So be sure to do it. But Justin, nevertheless, he is the cameraman for Titan FC. So we've been missing him. All these different episodes. I hope he comes back up. So
yep, let's sign off and wrap the show up.
Absolutely. Guys, thank you very much for joining us for the Fight Mixer. We will have our guest hosts or co-hosts back on next week. We'll have another array of MMA fighters back on. And thank you very much for joining us. And we'll see you next week.
Perfect.
Hi, I'm Matt Seibel, producer of the Fight Mixer Show. We have a good lineup of guests coming up next week. Take a look for yourself.
Hey, y'all, it's your boy, Dad. Make sure you guys tune in on Fight Mixer. Your boy's going to be on there.
Show love.
What up, no fight fans? It's your boy John Baptist Birdsong tapping in because I want y'all to tap in. July 30th, Fight Mixer. We'll be having an interview about how I'm about to do these boys this year. Ooh, I can't wait to baptize them.
Oh,
wow. What? Oh, game.